The days are getting shorter, the nights are getting longer. Folks are battening down the hatches for winter, and that includes their summer getaway cabins. We'll talk with a northern Minnesota expert on how to protect your cabin investment from any surprises over the cold winter months. We'll also check out this year's Arctic Report card and visit with Dr. James Hansen of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies. You're listening to Jet Streaming from Minnesota Public Radio News. Welcome back, weather fans. I'm Kathy Werzer, host of Minnesota Public Radio's Morning Edition program. I'm by myself again. Is it something I've said? Paul, Mark, and Craig are all on assignment this week. Patty Ray Rudolph and Scooter Hibzinski are with me here in studio. Things are pretty quiet for the most part on the weather maps, but a lot of people do have cooler weather on their minds. As many folks say goodbye to another year of summer adventures at the lake, a lot of cabin owners across the country are faced with the task of making sure their investment is protected over the coming winter. To get the facts on cabin winterization, Jet Streaming turned to Joe the Plumber. Now, come on, no, not the one you may be thinking of these days. Our Joe the Plumber is Jolene Tharp, and she has been helping folks winterize their cabins in the Longville, Minnesota area for 26 years. She joins us now to give us some cabin winterization do's and don'ts. Joe, how are you? Welcome to Jet Streaming.
I'm doing just fine, and thank you very much.
So, Joe, when we talk about cabin winterization, what are the things that the seasonal cabin owners have to take into account as opposed to folks who have year-round cabins?
Well, with cabins, mainly they're seasonal. They cannot make it through the winter months, and thus you have to make sure you drain all the water out of the system or they will freeze and break.
And what happens then? It should be a mess, I would think.
It's absolutely a mess. And trust me, I've had a couple of people that have forgot to call a plumber or thought they could leave the heat on and come back later, but they've had a furnace issue and everything has froze up solid. I've had wall-hung toilets blow right off the wall. It's a mess and it's a very costly expense to repair broken pipes versus getting your cabin drained down properly in the fall.
Now, help, but I don't have a seasonal cabin. We used to, my family used to, and then we built a kind of a year-round place. So what happens to make those pipes, and in the case of the toilet, just blow right off the wall?
Well, when the temperatures drop below, people think that 32 is freezing, which it is. But up here, if the wind blows, it takes away the heat a lot quicker. So you can freeze at 38 degrees. Once you freeze, that water expands in the pipes, and they'll burst. Mm. Same thing with a toilet. Now, that's made out of China. So if you fill the bowl up, set it outside in the winter, let it freeze, odds are real good that that China bowl is going to be broke come spring because the ice pushes out. It needs a place to expand.
Okay. Thanks for the physics lesson there, Joe. When's the best time to start winterizing your cabin then?
Well, people like to hang in there as long as possible. They hate to give up on God's country up here. You need to plan ahead, though, because in the fall, we can get unseasonable temperatures a lot early. Now, if you're planning to take care of your cabin yourself, that's not an issue. You do it whenever you feel comfortable. If you're going to hire somebody and you're what I call a newbie, haven't had a plumber out to your place, you know, previously to shut it down, you need to make arrangements early. Up here, we're all busy. This is definitely a tourist area, and the temperatures drop, everybody leaves, and we are going in mass chaos up here.
Oh.
The sooner you can make an appointment with a plumber, the better off your chances are getting on somebody's list.
How many cabins do you do in a year, Joe?
I do about 150 of them.
Wow.
And people, the worst thing is they all come at the same time, and they all kind of go at the same time. So for about 2 months in the spring or 2 months in the fall, I have no time for any other service work or work. You have to juggle. I start really watching the weather. I even called a gentleman last night, and I said, please tell me you turned your pump off because the temps were going to get cold, and I know he cannot handle ice-cold weather.
Ooh, did he turn the pump off?
Yes, he did.
Oh,
he said I taught him well.
Smart guy.
You should never walk away from your cabin and leave that pump on That pump does not know you're not here.
Sure. You know, does it take just a little bit of water in the pipes in order to make them expand and burst? Can you get away with a little bit of water in the pipes, or do you have to drain everything?
Well, I prefer you drain everything.
Oh, sure, okay.
I mean, a little bit of water. We can't see inside the pipe, so I really don't know how much water's left in there.
You know, when you get into a cabin situation and you start winterizing it, how long does it usually take you to do that?
Well, over my years now, I've learned to be a lot faster at it. I use compressors, which pushes the water out of your piping system, draining the water heater and everything a lot quicker. So I can encompass doing more of them on a daily basis. Years ago, we used to have to sit there and wait for a water heater to drain. So I've just learned over my years how to do it a little faster. I have great clientele, so I try to organize my day to get a bunch of cabins in one area.
Sure, that makes sense. How much money can folks expect to spend on just your basic seasonal cabin winterization?
Up in this area, basic cabin runs $100.
Okay.
And it's a far cry from me walking out the door after you froze up and broke everything to the tune of $4,000.
Oh, Joe. Yeah. Well, that's quite a difference.
Yes.
Uh-huh. You know, let me ask you about something that is not the most appetizing thing to ask you about, but the septic systems of a lot of cabins. You know, what do you do when it comes to that situation? Because, if they freeze up, that is not a good deal.
Normally, a septic system is, because of the sewage in there and it puts off a gas, they stay warm. And if you're not up here using water, you don't need your septic system. It's customers who decide to come back at Thanksgiving or Christmas and then find out their septic has been frozen. At that point, you need to get a hold of a septic man and a pumper.
Okay.
That's out of the plumber's league.
Do you suggest, though, some folks I know put, a layer of straw on top of the drain field?
That helps with the insulation of the fact. So, per se, when you come in the spring, you hope that it's not frozen.
Oh, great.
Sounds There's like absolutely no way to tell exactly until you start using water. When you come in the spring, you need to have your eyes and your ears open. Are my drains sluggish? Are things not working as well as they did last fall? That should be a warning sign.
Okay. So it sounds as if you're going to kind of walk into something that you might not expect if you're not careful.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no. Let's say somebody's listening here, Joe, and they're thinking about building a summer cabin next year or, new construction now, okay? Before they start building, can they do anything to that design to make future winterization easier?
Well, it all depends on how the plumbing's installed. They all need to be drained. If you're going to build a seasonal place, it's seasonal. You need to drain it down the winter. You know, we have excellent well men up here because up in this area we deal with pumps, not city water. So it's a conglomeration of people that can make your system the best. A plumber can go in and they can plumb it in such a way that the homeowner then can drain it in the winter. They can make it pretty simple using a couple valves that they open. You know, your basic draining of the water heater and the pump and the well, they're out the door. They're done for the season.
You know, let me ask you something, Joe, that my dad used to do, and unless he was doing something completely silly, we had that little seasonal cabin right up on the North Shore around Two Harbors, Minnesota, and he used to drain everything and then put antifreeze in something, and I'm not sure exactly what he was doing. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay.
The antifreeze goes in the kitchen sink, the bathroom lav, because there is water in the traps. The traps are designed not to let sewer gas back into the home. So with the water in the trap, you must add antifreeze to it so that will not freeze and break.
Okay. So my dad was doing it right then.
Yes, he did a good job.
That's my dad. Well, anything else you want to add, Joe?
Well, just, the basic up here is be prepared. You know, either tend to your place yourself or get on a list of somebody. And please call early, because right now if somebody calls me, I have to decline them. I have my what I call my regular clientele that I take care of year after year, and they rule. I do them first, and if I have any free time, I can sneak somebody in.
I see. Okay. So today, how many do you have to do today, do you think?
What I have and what I'm going to get done are two different things.
Well, in that case, I hope you have a good day.
And I thank you, and I hope you have a good day, and the people out there with cabins, you know, good luck.
Absolutely. Thank you. That was Jolene Tharp. She's the owner of Harold's Plumbing and Heating in beautiful Longville, Minnesota. Autumn is also settling in over the far northern reaches of the globe, and researchers released the third annual Arctic Report Card last week. The report, compiled by 46 scientists from 10 countries, found that autumn temperatures in the Arctic are at record levels, and the Arctic Ocean is getting warmer and less salty as sea ice melts. The region has long been expected to be among the first areas to show impacts from global warming, which the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says is largely a result of human activities, adding carbon dioxide and other gases to the atmosphere. Autumn air temperatures in the Arctic are at a record 9 degrees Fahrenheit, or 5 Celsius, above normal. The report noted that in 2007, that was the warmest year on record in the Arctic, leading to a record loss of sea ice. This year's sea ice melt was second only to 2007. The study noted a warming trend on Arctic land and an increase in greenness as shrubs move north into areas that were formerly permafrost. It also found reindeer herds that had been increasing since the 1970s are now showing signs of leveling off or beginning to decline, and goose populations are increasing as they expand their range within the Arctic. Well, a while back on Jet Streaming, we heard from a man who many consider the father of climate change science in the U.S. He's Dr. James Hansen with NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, and he spoke with Minnesota Public Radio's Tom Cran.
So give us an example or two of the very latest new science or new evidence out there for climate change and global warming.
Well, I think it's the empirical evidence for what's happening, and Will Steger's observations in the Arctic are a good example. What has happened in the Arctic sea ice? Last summer in 2007, there was only about half as much sea ice at the end of the summer as there had been 30 years ago. And it's been going up and down from year to year, but generally there's a downward trend, and last year is particularly strong. And this year it looks like it's going to be very similar to last year. So it's just what we expected with global warming. We get this positive feedback effect. As the ice melts, then it reveals a darker surface that makes it warmer. You get more melting. The danger is that that will also begin to happen on the ice sheets, and that's going to really be a problem if it does.
What environmental clues do you see being observed that will make it known that we've literally reached a tipping point where there's no turning back?
Well, the example that I just gave you is a tipping point.
Really?
But the one that we're especially concerned about are those that would be irreversible. The Arctic sea ice could grow back if the planet gets a little bit colder. But if the ice sheets disintegrate, that is irreversible on time scale of thousands of years, because an ice sheet takes many thousands of years to grow up from snowfall piling up year by year. So we don't want those ice sheets to begin to disintegrate. And the other irreversible thing would be loss of species. If we cause the climate zones to move so rapidly that we drive species to extinction, well, they're gone forever. We would be leaving a much more desolate planet for our children and grandchildren, so we don't want to pass that tipping point.
How close are we to either of those that you just mentioned, tipping points, irreversible tipping points?
Well, I think we're getting very close. I think that we've already reached a level of gases, which if we left it there indefinitely, it would cause us to pass those. So
very close, you mean in decades?
I mean within decades, yes. I think, and in order to avoid those changes from happening over the next several decades, we're going to have to begin to reduce our emissions within this decade, within the next 5 to 10 years.
You have said that this election, this 2008 presidential election, is critical for the planet. You made those remarks before Congress earlier this summer. Why?
Because if we don't get on a different path with our emissions within the next several years, we are going to pass tipping points. And this next year is critical because we will get a new president in the United States. It's the opportunity to reassess what we're doing there. And the Kyoto Protocol is reaching a point where they've got to decide on what's going to follow after it. So this next year or two is critical to determining the future of the planet.
If I'm correct, you said back in 2004 that you yourself would have voted for John McCain if he was a choice on the ballot. He wasn't, but he is this year. Would you vote for him this year?
Well, you know, the thing that attracted me to John McCain several years ago was his position on campaign finance reform. I think that the biggest problem we have is money in government and the undue influence that it has on the decisions that are made in Washington.
Is that related to climate change, would you
say?
Well,
yes. You know, it is related. Yeah. It's very much related to climate change. Coal and oil. We have a lot of Congress people who are well-oiled and coal-fired. And unfortunately, that is the biggest obstacle to getting the changes that we need in order to solve the climate problem. You know, there are many benefits of a cleaner atmosphere. We've got to move beyond fossil fuels at some point, so why not do it sooner? Well, the reason we're not doing it is because of the influence of those special interests.
Is that on both sides of the aisle as you see it?
Yes, it is.
Are you confident there would be progress in either a McCain administration or an Obama administration?
They've both made statements that concern me. At one point, Obama was talking about making oil out of coal. Well, that's unfortunately, we can't do that if we want to preserve our planet. They don't yet seem to understand that. Well, they've begun to change their statements a little bit in that regard, but still I haven't seen an adequate. So I have not made up my mind.
You're in the undecided?
I'm in the column. Undecided at this point.
In April, you addressed a plea to Governor Pawlenty. You wrote a letter and then followed it up with a fairly detailed document with some recommendations to provide. You wanted the governor to provide more leadership when it comes to the issue of climate change. What did you hear back?
I unfortunately did not get a positive response back. I did not get a formal response, but I did get his administration did respond to the media, and they did not accept my conclusion that they should oppose new coal-fired power plants. You know, the governor gets credit for making some statements about the need to deal with the climate change and make goals for reducing emissions in the future by certain percentages. But the truth is that we cannot solve the problem if we're building more coal-fired power plants. And that he should make a strong statement to that effect. And I understand politically why he's not. Apparently, it's because neighboring governors in South Dakota and other states want to sell more coal. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to figure out a different way to make our money because coal is just not going to allow us to keep a reasonable climate and preserve creation.
Is there profit in renewable and cleaner sources of energy?
It would be if we would put a proper carbon price on a proper price on carbon emissions. Then the renewables would begin to compete. And I think we should also look with an open mind at the next generation nuclear power. I think there's the possibility that the fourth generation nuclear power could actually solve some of our problems because it could burn nuclear waste and would not require any mining of uranium for the next 1,000 years. So we have to have an open mind and allow the competing possibilities for energy to prove themselves. And I think we should be open-minded about nuclear power.
That was Dr. James Hansen from NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies with Minnesota Public Radio's Tom Cran. That means the weather website of the week. Jet Streaming would like to remind you that many states have winter weather tips as part of their individual state government websites, so be sure to check yours out. Here in Minnesota, the state's winter weather preparedness website is at winterweather, all one word, winterweather.state.mn.us. And don't forget, you can always drop us a line for a question or comment by way of the Jet Streaming webpage at minnesotapublicradio.org. By the way, I do have something from Julie in Moorhead. She has a question here, and I'm going to have to ask the guys this. Recently, we had a couple of 43-degree windy days. However, one felt much colder. We described it as that wind has a real bite to it. So Julie wants to know, what gives wind a bite? Or in the summer, what makes wind like a blast furnace? Temperature's the same. Wind speed's the same here, but it's a much different feel. Okay. Well, we'll ask the guys that, see what they think. That's Julie from Moorhead, Minnesota. Thanks, Julie. And again, if you have a question or comment, drop us a line on our Jet Streaming webpage at minnesotapublicradio.org. And that's going to do it, friends, for Jet Streaming this week. From Mark and Craig, Paul, and producers Jim Bickle, P. Ray Rudolph, and our sound guru, Scooter Hibzinski, I'm Kathy Werzer. Thanks for listening. Remember to keep an ear here to Jet Streaming and your weather eye on the sky.